Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Good day.
And Ash Millman.
Also good day.
Now, I don't know if you guys know, that doesn't sound good at all. I'll make it a better day.
I am very happy to be here.
Good. I don't know if you guys know, but Final Fantasy VIII's remaster is out.
Yes, I did know. I'm
Celebrate.
Not much of a Final Fantasy person, but I've got a lot of friends who are very excited for this one. I feel like, did they not announce this one, like, not that long ago, that it was getting remastered?
Well, this isn't the meat of the thing at all, but it's kind of why I thought of the topic for this podcast. But a hilarious story is related to that, because Square actually lost the original code master for that game.
Good that.
So just for years and years and years, that was why they always kept re-releasing Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy IX, everything else, because they just literally lost the original game.
Oh, fair enough. Happens to the best of us.
I know. So apparently, I think someone who originally had the PC version or the PC code lent it back to them so they could remake it again, which is why we finally have it again coming out now. Either way, Final Fantasy VIII's remaster is out now. It looks lovely and crisp. All the original PS1 polygons and everything are all very nice and lovely, which sort of made me think of, like, you know, you get nostalgic for that time, that game, that period in time. And then when we were sort of growing up as gamers, I know Ash was only like 5 back then, but me and Rach have a whole lifetime of things
to
talk
about.
We were at least 8 or 9. So we kind of just thought, like, that general question of, like, you know, whether gaming is better when you were a kid, because everyone gets really romanticizes that time period and gets really nostalgic for it. So we've kind of picked a few games to get to later on, but I kind of just have like a general conversation about, you know, like our thoughts of what it was like back then kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like the underlining thing is, like, gaming was better when you were a kid, because when you grow up, you start to get responsibilities, and you have to look after other people and stuff like that. But like when you're a kid and you have people looking after you, you have 6 weeks in summer for school holidays just to do nothing but play games.
And your tea's just ready.
And your tea is ready. And oh man, it's just the best. Gaming was better because we didn't have to juggle it with so many other things.
Which is ironic, because like games are way longer now when we have, like, I guess the most generation have less time or whatever. But yeah.
I feel like it's not necessarily a point of gaming being better, but the like accessibility of games being better. I feel like actual quality of games now is obviously ridiculous and has gotten better and better and better, and with remasters and everything you get to play the old stuff in a brand new way, which I think is very appealing. But I think the culture of like growing up with games is just the nostalgic bit, isn't it? Like, you don't have to do anything besides play games, your tea is ready, like, everything is new and exciting and innovative because you've never experienced it before. It's not like you've played like 7 Final Fantasy games and now it's number 8. It's like it's the first time you get to experience everything.
That's the thing though, because like I know like Benji, who like is you know, is on our main channel and everything, he's a big supporter of like old school gaming, because there was so much innovation in the industry. Like Mario 64 was the first 3D camera and like the first 3D Final Fantasy and things like that. But like I don't know how much stock I put in that. Like, you know, new ideas were more
there's
prevalent.
Still innovation, but I guess we're kind of reaching a point where we're like plateauing as far as technology goes. But there's still, like, I mean, look at the PlayStation VR. Like, would you even have imagined that would be in our houses 20
true.
Years ago?
We fit.
With the balance board and everything. I mean, like, there are, like, it's like, because you can look to those things. Obviously, PSVR is like the most recent, like, massive innovation. Like, it literally plays in a different way than everything else. But I do think it's easy, like, you look back at things, you know, like those old school, like, sometimes a franchise, the first time it went 3D or the first motion controls coming in or whatever. Like, I think there's overall less, like, mechanical innovation these days, at least, like, especially in the AAA sphere and stuff. But I'm not going to be, like, definitive about it, but I think that's what a lot of people sort of hang stuff on, is that, like, the first time they saw Mario in 3D was like a massive deal or whatever. And I remember seeing Final Fantasy VII for the first time and being like, holy crap, even though it looks like it's made of Lego now, that was a big old deal back in the day. But we can talk about graphics. But do you guys tend to go back to old games? And then, like, what do you sort of, like, think when you go back to old graphics and stuff? Because some people are like, oh my god, it looks so ugly or whatever. Whereas I love all that stuff.
Actually, this came up because I've been replaying Ocarina of Time. Guaranteed, though, I am playing it on a PC. I'm emulating it. I do own it, though. I've got it on the N64. I'm not being naughty, don't worry.
Do your due.
And someone was like, wow, this actually holds art. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Link is made out of, like, sausages and eggs, if you know what I mean by that. Uh-huh. But it holds up. It's weird. It's bizarre. Like, you mm-hmm. know, looking at it, like, this isn't the best looking thing ever. But then at the same time, your brain goes, this looks amazing. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
What do you think, Ash? Have you gone back to old stuff?
And, yeah. The thing that I always go back to, I talk about it all the time, is Sly Raccoon. Like, right. I always end up going back to that. But I feel like that is stylized in a certain way that makes it timeless. Like, mm-hmm. and lots of old games were about having a style, like a cartoon style, mm-hmm. and like cell shading and all that sort of thing. And going back to it makes it timeless and it still feels the same. Whereas now we get the whole photorealism the whole photorealism gig, which instantly ages and ages and dates, not eights.
Well, see, no, that's, sort of yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is like the thing with me, because I went back to play Mario 64, like you play anything on the N64 or old school stuff in general. Like I was going to say that I thought maybe our like child brains made up the distance more. Like, you know, because we were younger, we would say, oh, that's a lava level, that's a castle, that's a field, whatever. And you kind of connect the dots yourself and you sort of imagine yourself in those worlds, or you see them as fully formed as they now are, like in the modern day. All that detail is now there that our kid brains used to put in. But when you go back to old school stuff, like it's weird because they are just suggesting like certain things that make up a level set. Like whether it's, like I said, like lava or castles or trees or whatever. Like the first time you step out in a Hyrule field, like you said, it still holds up. You still get the contrast between like the Kokiri Forest and then in the Hyrule field.
There is nothing there, but yet there was. It's hard to describe.
But I still think that like by like suggesting those key things, like it still works. Like it's, you know, you still can't imagine yourself in it. Mm. Like whether or not that's because games are inherently escapist or whatever. Like for me, I don't need, you know, like 4K detail on a leaf. Mm. Just give me like, you know, like a blocky old field and I'll totally still take it as a field.
Immersive, like, yeah. Yeah,
and it's like, I don't feel like, if you guys have gone back to old school stuff and like, have you gone back to anything and gone like, okay, this doesn't hold up, this is missing something, or for the most part, can you still play it? Either way, it's like sometimes it can be gameplay, it can be graphics. For me, like for Mario and Zelda, like they're still totally lush.
The only thing that springs to mind graphically was when we knocked out GoldenEye at your birthday, Scott. And I was like, whoa, did this actually look this bad? Right. I did not remember it looking that bad. It looks pretty bad.
There's another thing with old school stuff is that like general resolution stuff, old school cables and resolutions, they were blurry as hell. Yeah. Like we all used like RF cables, then maybe SCART or whatever. And it's like, but now you get used to HD and like, you know, you get used to a lack of like jagged lines on polygons and stuff. But GoldenEye is hilarious because like it's easy to forget that like the N64 had to design a first person control scheme around one analog stick and four controller buttons, which like when you go back to GoldenEye, it's like you're just strafing everywhere. For me, I found that impossible to play because I'd never like played it before, but I guess if you grew up with it, you'd be totally fine with it. But sometimes like gameplay stuff sort of sticks out. But yeah, how much do you think like your nostalgia lies to you? Like,
all my experiences of going back to PS2 games, so I love my PS2, I go back to it every now and then, play something that I've really enjoyed, mainly Spyro is the one that I do all the time. Like going back to those ones, I always have a great time, and I always like, sometimes I feel like PS1 and PS2 controls to an extent are so specific the thing. They're so much harder to play, like I feel like, because they don't give you as much like hitbox room and everything. Like playing Spyro on the PS1 is deadly, but it's so fun because of that, and Crash as well, like when you're like jumping on the platforms and have to be like pixel perfect sort of thing. But I always have a great time and always remember it for that and then experience it in the same way again, like, and it reminds me of youth
and sort of with Crash, because like we can like talk about like Crash and Spyro, because like the thing when they remade the Crash games, like obviously on the dev side they're trying to think of a way to kind of like play through like to our muscle memory and like make it play like we remembered when we were growing up. But when they sort of, obviously like Naughty Dog had changed the physics models across Crash 1, 2 and 3, so when they retroactively applied Crash 3's physics to Crash 1 and 2, for me that made all my muscle memory off, and I was mistiming all the jumps and everything, which like is something that I like hold true. Like for me, like I have those inbuilt feels, like Crash Team Racing, like the original one or whatever, like I'll always go back to that and I know exactly how to take every corner and stuff. Which is a weird thing that you get with remasters. Like, do you guys find that like you love those old school feels like more than you realize when they bring out the remasters and stuff like that?
Playing the new Spyro, having like a little dabble in it, I turned it off after like the first level.
No,
like,
you didn't.
I put it back on again, but I enjoyed it. Like for the first time I played it, I was like, you know what, this isn't old Spyro, this isn't pointy, it doesn't have a goofy voice, like it's not like really janky. Yeah, exactly. But like it wasn't as janky as the original one, and I had to turn it off and then come back to it with like renewed perceptions, and then I really enjoyed it once I played it.
See, I had that with Crash. Like obviously on the mechanical side I thought it didn't feel right, just because I was so embedded in what I thought like Crash felt like and stuff. But that's one of the weirdest things, is like in a way, are those older worse quote-unquote graphics better because we're more associated with them? Like if someone was going to say like which version of Crash or Spyro should I play, would you recommend the new ones or the originals?
Oh, oh, I I don't know, because
someone asked me that for Spyro, and I was like, I actually don't know.
I think I'd recommend the new Spyro. I think it's fantastic.
Oh god, I love the new Spyro.
Controls really well. Like, I remember being younger. Obviously, I like to think I'm better at video games now. Yeah. But I remember just being like so frustrated trying to make the like really tricky glides, like where the ones where you have to hover at the end. Like, Spyro 2.
Or the speed dash and then get one jump at the end or
whatever. The sort of platforming in Spyro was so difficult back then. And I feel like it's a lot more sort of finessed.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's the thing with Mario, because like obviously it was the first like 3D camera, and like that's the one thing, because I would totally say that Mario 64 like holds up, but its camera really gets in the way. But obviously they were just getting used to it. They'd never done it before. Yeah. It was 1996. But that's the thing with playing all the games that came after all these big titles, like you play all the improvements, so sometimes going back to it isn't like the most playable.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of like suggesting stuff, I think I would give someone the new Spyro. Unless you like have a case for like, I guess, the charm of the original.
I think I also would say play them if they never played them before and didn't know what they were doing and were like, oh, I'm new to gaming, please tell me how to work.
I'm an alien from another planet.
Beep, bop, boop. I would say play the new ones because they are much more accessible. Mm. But the old ones are just so nice.
That's like, the thing. But like, what is that? Is that like because we grew up with it? Like the look of it. Like, I don't know. Like something like Crash.
It's
like
the characters and the cutscenes that I couldn't really get over. It's the in Spyro 2, the cutscenes at the start and like the characters having actual like
I like the original
faces.
Read on I'm a fawn, you dork. Yeah. And she like just nails the dork bit that they didn't like do as much venom in the new one. Something like Metal Gear Solid getting remade as Twin Snakes as well on the GameCube. I always like hated that. Yeah. One, because I couldn't play it because I was a young kid with my PlayStation. I was like, oh, it's on GameCube. But also because they re-recorded all the dialogue lines. Like sometimes those little sound bites and stuff are the most embedded things.
Yeah.
Which like, yeah, like even like on Crash, like the original like noise when you get the mask. Like that's like the original version. I don't want the remake one.
I want your version like a ringtone noise now.
We should totally ask anyone who's listening to this whether it's Ooga Booga or some other word.
I always thought it was Ooga Booga.
I always wrote it out as Humalaga, but it isn't even, that's not even a word. But if I say Humalaga, it sounds
that's
like
what
the
it
thing,
sounds like.
Which it doesn't sound like Ooga Booga. Like for me it's always Humalaga.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
It's near enough. But yeah, I guess another sort of extension about like the way the games look and stuff is that sort of debate between pixels and polygons. And for the longest time in the industry, it was kind of just like assumed that you couldn't go back to the PS1 and 64 stuff because it fundamentally looks quote unquote ugly or like just not good, doesn't look good. It's quite muddy and brown and gray and whatever. Like you always have those really polygonal looks. Like it was something that eventually kind of ended with Max Payne 1's face where he's just a block with a face. But if you look at like GoldenEye or Final Fantasy, the original Metal Gear, there's a lot of games that just have faces stapled under the front of square polygons. So what do you guys think of that? Because I still love that, and something like the Final Fantasy VIII remake is a crispier version of that. But do you find that that's like a less palatable look for games?
No, I think it's fine. I think it's the thing is, what we've got to approach this is reminiscent of an era as well. So like, as much as it's like our childhood, it is also 90s gaming and noughties gaming. Same way you'd approach a film and be like, right, this is a 70s film. It has that real vibe, has that real sheen to it that like, this feels dated, but I still very much enjoy it for the evocation of a time that it's from. And I think that very much applies to games as well. So having someone with all the pointy faces and polygons and pixels and that sort of thing is great, because as much as it's nostalgic for us having experienced it, it's also representative of what was
that's
the
what
time
we had at the time.
Well.
Yeah.
So I think it works perfectly well, and it's really nice to look back on as well.
Same.
Yeah, it just doesn't bother you, does it? Yeah. No, I don't really see anyone being bothered by it. And any kids like these days who would look back and say like, well, I'm not playing this game because my face has one polygon.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, spoil little brats.
Go play Final Fantasy 7 right now.
9,000 polygons.
Oh man, there's a whole bunch. Like when the indie scene sort of took off a lot more in 2011, 2012, 2013, like when everything was a pixel platformer, when the indie label was only associated with that stuff, there was a lot of conversations, a lot of headlines around like, well, we can't revisit the 3D stuff because early 3D is just bad, quote unquote. Whereas I would say that it still has charm. I think that if you do it well, that stuff can still look great. There's a game called like Devil Daggers that's like a Doom adjacent type thing. Ion Storm was very much like chasing that stuff. I think there's a way to do it that is like, hey, the 90s were fun. We all had a blast. You can kind of do it again.
Yeah.
And in terms of gameplay, like you were saying about like trying to reapproach stuff with like a modern, like a mindset that emulates what it was like at the time.
Yeah.
Is that how you guys tend to revisit old stuff? Because I do. I'm like, there's this. I try to, like for Mario 64, I was like, man, this would have been amazing in like 1996. And oh my God, look at this rotary camera. Look at the way this level set up, and look at this verticality, and whatever. That's how I tend to revisit stuff. I 100%. Don't tend to measure it up to modern stuff.
It's
at all.
The same as films, though, as well. Like you watch a black and white film, or you watch like a 30s film, and you see like claymation and all that sort of thing, and it's like you're like, holy crap! Like what were they doing back then? Like it's so cool watching how it's evolved as well, seeing starting points and how that's influenced now. Like polygon pointy face and like pointy boob Lara has influenced how we
Toblerone boobs.
Yeah, exactly. Has experienced how influenced how we experience that through over the. influenced how we experienced that over the years since a release, and watching the evolution of that is part of the interesting point of it, and how it's like developed.
Yeah, it's all like a part of history. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's an important part of history.
Yeah, and like that, like viewing it almost as like a historic item for me, that maintains the charm. Yeah. Like I think even going back to something like I said, like Mario 64, I know it's like a massive, like obviously it's a huge essential game, but I never played it when I was a kid, minus like 5 minutes in a shop or something.
Same, it was at yours we played for the first time, because I played it on DS. When I did it on DS.
Oh no.
See, everyone,
I like the DS one.
Why is that one bad? Because you and Benji are both like, oh god, DS
they changed too much.
Okay.
You don't even start as Mario, you start as flipping Yoshi, and I'm a Yoshi fan. I like a Yoshi, but not in Mario 64.
That's a bit.
You have to earn your Mario.
He's your prize at the end is Yoshi. Like, you're not meant to start as Yoshi.
That is a bit of a weird. just watch the hands and that whole thing. But yeah, do you tend to like when you revisit old school stuff? Is it like I'll try and imagine the mindset that I might have been in if I was that age at the time?
Yeah, totally. No, a lot of the things I've played recently have been games that I have already played in the past. So I kind of tend to think like, oh, I remember like this blowing my mind. Like like I said with Spyro. Mm-hmm.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
One game I did want to talk about was Dark Cloud.
Ooh, bring it on.
Because I played that again recently because I found out that it was on PS4. Mm-hmm. This was a game I had, like, one of the first games I ever played on my PS2. And I played it thinking...
That'd be amazing.
I played it thinking, oh, now I found this really difficult when I was young. This is probably going to be, like, dreadful.
Right.
Oh, I flipping loved it. if anything, it was even better. Uh-huh. Because I remembered everything exactly like it was, except I now had, like, super gamer brain now. And I could actually figure out and do it.
I think that, like, that's going back to something like that, like, whether it's the, like, was it the graphics kind of thing that was like give it the charm, like it, or it's the way that it feels, you're building towns alongside,
it was like,
moving around.
Yeah, it was like dungeon crawler heckin' Sims. It was so weird. Yeah, well, maybe
Dark
not the Sims. Maybe not the same.
But it has got like Dragon. If you want to make a modern comparison, it's like Dragon Quest Builders kind of thing.
Dragon Quest,
like,
yes.
Ni No Kuni 2 or whatever. Like, you're dropping like houses in place and building a little township.
But you like collect all the pieces inside the dungeons, and the dungeons are full of random enemies. And
hardly any games have done that. Like Ni No Kuni 2 and like Dark Chronicle, the sequel to that, did it. But like, yeah, that idea, like something like that, is such a charming idea in itself. It kind of feels like an early 2000s idea that maybe wouldn't get off the ground like today. When you're on about like difficulty or like thinking that maybe it might not be as playable or whatever.
Yeah.
So you were mentioning before we came in, like old school difficulty, like we put up with so much crap when we were playing old school game. Because I think whenever I go back to something else, the only thing that I want to change is checkpoint placement or maybe like scum save, like use an emulator or something. Like, is that something you guys do as well?
When you get the, because I have the Super Nintendo Mini and the Nintendo Entertainment Mini, whatever you call the NES.
We call them NES. NES Mini.
So I got those, and I was playing through the likes of like Donkey Kong Country, and which I used to find so flipping difficult when I was young, because obviously like it's got save points that are like so few and far between. But with the modern version with the little Super Nintendo Mini, you could just make a save scum and literally just save a version of it and then just load it back up again. And that almost felt like, well, obviously it is cheating a little bit.
That's, do you hear like, that thing? Like, sometimes when you go back to something like that where it's like, oh, I should play like the real way. Like, does it, do you ever have that?
I felt a bit scummy, but then then again, I actually completed the game. So that, you know, that was good.
It kind of wipes it out.
That was good as well.
I don't think I've used an emulator, you know. Like, I've always just gone to the source. Yeah, I'm like a real gamer would, you know. So,
well, all right, you got your gamer card, have you? Jeez.
Excuse me, my game card.
You're not wrong. I mean, that's the thing with the N64. Like, I could have got like Banjo Kazooie and Tooie. Like, those things have been re-released on Xbox. Like, Perfect Dark's on there as well. But I was like, with Mario 64, like, I didn't get the DS one. Obviously, they changed. That's a different example. But that idea of like, trying to find the original. I like doing that as much as possible. Like, I got an N64 for my 30th, and I did get the original Mario 64. And even though like you then come up against like bad checkpoints or things that refined over time, I quite like that. For me, that is part of the charm. Although it can go bad.
I'm really, really glad I played Link's Awakening on an emulator, actually, Ash, because
how dare you?
I ran into like a game-breaking bug and I had to restart I had to restart from my save point. And if I was playing on the Game Boy, I would have had to restart the whole game.
Yeah, I would smash it at that point.
Your AA batteries run out and you're done. I think I've seen people in some comment sections be like, well, even things like that, even like being like kicked back to an old checkpoint, like that's just the way that it was, and that's what we grew up with.
Well, we didn't know there was anything else.
You didn't even think of it. I mean, the thing is, like, this is a weird thing to remember, but I remember my first game with a quick save when you could just hit the menu and just quick save, which I know was a thing in PC gaming, but on consoles, for me, the first game that did that was Chaos Theory, Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, when you could just pause, and I was like, that's the revolution. Like, before I've even attempted this kill, I'm going to make a save and then go kill a dude, and then you can just try it as many times as you want. But I guess in terms of like revisiting stuff, if like along, maybe with those things or alongside stuff, are there things that you think just are essential quality of life improvements? For me, it is stuff like that. It's being able to save anywhere or whatever.
Yeah, no, I think there's much better ways of playing them now. I don't dispute that it's good using emulators. You know what I mean? I think it is a good idea. I just haven't done them personally because I've got like old consoles. So I might as well.
Which I like the idea of. I like the idea of like over time. Like my dream is to eventually own every single console and have this massive like 50 row tall.
Yeah, yours is ridiculous.
Thing. I haven't got everything yet, but I'm
I say the
it.
Old consoles. I'm talking about my PS1. I'm just like, come on. That's so age, so cool. Like.
But do you still have the original PS1, the big bulky one?
Yeah. Nice. It was a great one. It's at my mom's house.
That's an antique.
Yeah, with like memory cards and everything. Okay, so we did have like a handful of specific games. We only have about 10 minutes-ish left, but we can sort of run some things down and just get some thoughts going on whether these things hold up or maybe things that we would change or whatever. We mentioned Mario 64 and stuff before, but Ash, you mentioned Baldur's Gate, Dark Alliance.
I love
which is still
game.
One of the greatest RPGs ever made.
It is. The first time you see a Beholder, that was the first time I experienced a Beholder. I was like, oh my God, it's
what's
so scary.
Why am I forgetting the Beholder? What's
there's
Beholder?
Definitely a Beholder in Dark and Baldur's Gate.
What's a Beholder?
It was one with the, it's a big eyeball thing with all the like tentacles coming out, like Dungeons and Dragons. Like,
but my memory of that game is the first time I saw water physics, because they made a whole big deal of like if you run through the water you can see the ripples. And it's like me and my please you can play local co-op and just running around in the water going, look how it looks like this.
I played through that game so many times with my dad, like local co-op was see my memory of like gaming, my nostalgia for gaming is local co-op.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah,
something like that's the thing that like, the industry's kind of gone back and forward on like couch co-op stuff, but there's hardly any games that sort of specialize in it unless it's something like A Way Out, which kind of feels like an anomaly.
I really hope Man of Medan does well, because that's a couch co-op, isn't it?
Yeah, you can do like a game night version where you just pass the controller around.
That's cool.
We need more games like that for sure, because like you say, like that is like a massive part of the nostalgia.
Is that like a thing that's tied in with like when you're kids you have like a more kind of active social circle, or you're in school all the time, you have people to check in with?
We didn't really have like the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, like, we didn't. You maybe did.
No, but back in the day, like when I was at like little school, was it was always you go to someone's house after school and play games and stuff. Yeah. But then, like, I feel like now everyone can get in touch with anyone at any point, and you can be online. You can go home and still be surrounded by a social circle and play across like Xboxes or PlayStations or whatever without having to be with them.
Sometimes though, like we did at my 30th, like when everyone comes together and you do play local gaming, that just is the best way to play multiplayer stuff. Like it just is. Like whether it's like a psychological thing about like, you know, the amount of, there's like that whole statistic about 95% of communication is in person or whatever. It's like being in person with someone and playing a game is just fundamentally better than playing online. For the vast majority anyway, at least something like Gang Beasts or Overcooked or whatever. Depends what it is. But yeah, Baldur's Gate, like I would still, like if we're going to talk about things, whether you should still revisit them today or not.
I love it.
I would still, would you say you should revisit it today? I totally
would. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. If I have like a set few games that I played throughout my childhood as co-op games that I go back to and make other people play, which is Gauntlet Dark Legacy.
Oh, you had it before, yeah, Dark Legacy.
Gauntlet Dark Legacy, Baldur's Gate, Dark Alliance. And there is another one, Champions of Norrath.
Oh, is that the Norrath thing as well? There's like some old school RPGs like that. They've sort of been like bred out just because of the way that the way that certain formulas will sell, whereas those old school things do have charm because they do feel different even today. Rach, one of yours was Conker's Bad Fur Day, which is maybe of a negative spin, but like still it's worth talking about because that's such a like legendary game.
Yeah, it's so bizarre because it was always this legendary game that my friends had that I would get to go and like play like maybe 5-10 minutes of. Mom and dad would never buy me it because I was a sheltered wee angelic child. And I never got it because, like, obviously for good reason, it's filthy. But like,
there's a naked plant in it.
I've never heard of it.
A naked plant with boobs.
Oh my god!
I know,
bouncing on a sunflower's titties. Yeah, but yeah, so it's foul, but it's amazing. So I picked it up in my adulthood. It came out on Xbox One with the Rare Replay, and I was like, brilliant! I'm gonna get to finally actually play Conker. Oh god, it's terrible.
In terms of like the way that it plays?
The humor is spot on. The humor is hilarious. It's so dry and slow and like methodical. It's brilliant. But the controls!
Is the N64 controller strike again?
I think that's what it is. I think it's because it's an N64 game that was made for N64. They've done nothing with it and put it on the Xbox One controller. And it's just so... you can't get over it, or I couldn't anyway. And I never have gone back and finished it.
See, things like that, you'd think that they would just... Because I'm assuming you can control the camera with the right C buttons. Or did they not have that in back then?
Yes.
Because it came out in like 2000 or whatever. They should just map that to the stick and
kind of make
it smoother.
It is mapped to the stick, but it's terrible.
Okay. It just feels
bad. It's
just
not done well.
It's bad, and it shouldn't be that bad.
Fair enough. I think that something like that, people talk about it with the script, like the one-liners, the set pieces, like talking to a giant poo. There are things like that.
I need to play this game.
Have you seen the giant poo?
No.
Does he have a name?
The Great Mighty Poo.
The Great Mighty Poo. He's got a song and everything.
It is brilliant.
There's
it's absolutely.
Poo song.
There's a poo song.
Yes, I am the Great Mighty Poo, and I'm going to throw my at you.
Yes. How about some scat, you little tea? Because if you see a PC for the YouTube, you should see it. You should see the word that rhymes with that word. God.
No, it is absolutely fantastic, and it's worth playing for the script alone. But it was just like something that came up in my head as a negative, where it was like when we were a kid, we just accepted it. We were like, right, let's wrestle with these. We can handle these controls. We don't know any better. But because we're so used to like games with cameras and two sticks, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think like as the medium's become just bigger and more popular and more like mainstream with way more people playing it, they have like unified those control schemes over time.
Yeah.
Like there's a certain level of just accessibility that like we kind of assume is going to be there. I put down Final Fantasy 7, which I'm kind of going to have like Final Fantasy 8 and 9 and whatever, but those old school games, like 7 does look ridiculous. It does look like a bunch of Lego bricks. I'm a huge fan, but like it's a thing. But something like Final Fantasy 8 and 9, all three of those games, especially 7 and 9, although if I was going to hold one up, it would be 9 the whole way through, because 7's story, although when I was a kid you don't even realize, 7's story falls off a cliff like 2/3 of the way through.
I've been trying like all this time, I've never played it, I've been watching it, I've been listening to you about it, I've been trying to comprehend this game and I just don't get it.
So I'm not going to ruin it, but there's a lot of clones, there's a lot of sort of like experiments going on, there's a lot of lab experiments, a lot of characters who aren't really the characters the whole way through.
Oh no.
If you like a good anime style plot twist, I recommend you Final Fantasy 7. Okay. But if I was going to recommend one old school Final Fantasy to just go back to, it would actually be Final Fantasy 9. That's the one when they, have you guys played 9? Have you seen it and stuff?
Final Fantasy has gone over my head.
Good lord,
Ash. Yeah, I've seen Spirits Within and I thoroughly enjoyed
it. Oh, I hate the Spirits Within is your touchstone for Final Fantasy.
It is. Oh, it was great. So
maybe it is. Rach, have you played Final Fantasy 9? It's a no, isn't it?
It's a no.
Oh, okay. But it's good. That's fine. I can tell you about it. But on Final Fantasy IX, that was the one where they had like a really bad translation thing with Final Fantasy VII, and then VIII was a bit more of a more considered development or whatever. And then IX was the one where they were like, people, that a lot of the fan backlash was like, just do a traditional Final Fantasy game with like, you know, decent sort of turn-based combat and, you know, like character decisions and whatever. So IX was their like, IX is their like love letter to what Final Fantasy was like kind of thought to be at that time. So it's very much like a fairy tale. It's like princesses gone missing and knights trying to find them, and you play as like a band of thieves going after them and whatever. And like from the score to the way that it plays to like the way you build your characters and the different moves that you learn and everything, that is the game. Okay. Like if you're ever wondering why is Final Fantasy a big deal, it's Final Fantasy IX. Even though VII's a big old deal, IX is the one that you can just hold up and it's absolutely brilliant. Okay. So yeah, I would say that. Something else that you mentioned was Sly Raccoon, which you did mention before, but it's so good.
I just love it. I talk about it as often as I can because I think it's the pinnacle of nostalgic gaming. Like it's so good. It's got all its little sections. It's got like the way that it does its mechanics, everything, and you gain like skills as you go across, and the fun that it has with its narrative and stuff and being really goofy. I just think it's a great game.
I think a cel-shaded, like, because it became a cartoon series, or it's going to be one on like Netflix or whatever.
Yeah, it's got a film coming out and all sorts. There's all sorts that's planned for it. I don't know whether it's actually come to fruition.
It almost felt like it would be perfect for that though. Like they already had this great little cast with, I always forget the dude's name, the little turtle guy.
Bentley.
And like the big hippo dude.
Murray.
And
Carmelita Fox.
Carmelita Fox is like proper common San Diego style. The animation's already on there. But like that like setup for that game always felt like it was ripe for like books and tie-ins and everything else. So something like Sly Raccoon you should still go back to. Plus they're available in the HD collections where they're just like smoothed over.
Oh, I should play this game.
They're really
have you not
lush,
played
like.
It? Never played it, no. Although you describing that just made me think of that's totally how I feel about Spyro. Yeah. Like that was my series, and then I realized you played that too, but like I'm just like, oh wow, okay, it's probably really good. I should probably play them.
It's like it was great, and that has like a really like punchy script. It's really fun. It's a proper like Saturday morning cartoon made into a game. Like it's really, really well done.
It's ludicrous. Like the way he talks and it's just good. Please play it.
He's a very, very good dude. Rachel, last one was Link's Awakening, because that's about to come out for the new one in September, but like the old school one still kind of holds up. You just recently went through it, I think.
I mentioned that, I played through it on an emulator. I have it on the Game Boy, and it was always just that little bit too difficult for me to complete when I was Wii. But finally did go through it and complete it, and it is incredible.
Did you sort the mystery of the wind fish?
Oh, mate.
Get in.
Your heart is not ready. Your heart is not ready for the ending of this game. It is so sad. It's beautiful. But there are obviously a few bits that is like, it's very clearly a Game Boy game. It's like very basic. You can only have like two items equipped at once. Mm-hmm. Every time you go up to a rock, if you don't have the right item equipped, you get this really long, non-skippable thing that says, you can't pick up this rock. You're not wearing the right item. It's so annoying. So these are things hopefully that I'm hoping, you know, that they fix in the remake. Mm-hmm. And like hopefully I'm really, really hoping the remake is going to be the pinnacle. Like that's going to be the one that people are to play.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's the hope.
Well, because like that original one, like they do put you through a lot of kind of like arduous stuff. Like there's a big like 9-step fetch quest.
Oh, don't you diss the fetch quest.
I'm just saying that I think they make you earn by the end of it. You really feel like you've gone on a big old journey.
Yes.
I'm still a big fan of the old Link's Awakening.
What am I in the middle of here?
I know. Like,
defending.
When Zelda fans attack. There's but yeah, I mean, that game has one of the best versions of the Hyrule open world theme, like when it has the extended little like trilly version of it. I love it. But I think that those things, if you're going to recommend the old school one, it's because it is more kind of arduous, but by the end of it there's a reason people say it's the best one, because you finally get there with all the windfish stuff and the ending and everything else.
It's definitely among the best. I don't know if it's
I'm talking through Benji. Benji's the dude who says Link's Awakening is the best one. Yeah. That's his favorite one. But yeah, I guess let us know what you think down in the comments below about your old school favorites and which ones you would recommend to still play today. For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Thanks for listening.
And Ash Millman.
Also, thanks for listening. My voice sounds so...
Oh, good Lord, Ash.
Thank you for being here.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.